Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Eddie Moretti. Welcome to the Vice Podcast. My guest today is Greta Gerwig. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome. So I want to talk first about Frances Ha and, mm-hmm. you know, it's how it's doing. And,
yes.
you know, critically, it's been acclaimed across the board. I don't think I've read a bad review of the film. I loved it. That's a huge, you know, plus.
Yeah.
But like, how's the film doing as a film commercially and, you know, how many screens are you on and all that good stuff?
Well, it's actually doing really well commercially, like on its terms. I mean, it opened in four theaters its first weekend, and then it expanded to 81 its second weekend, and then this weekend it's expanding to 121 theaters or something.
There's no stopping this film.
Yeah, it's just gonna, it's exponential growth, but it's, I mean, it's like doing really well. Like, people are really going to see it. And I think one of the things that we didn't totally know is, like, do people still go to the movie theaters?
Right.
And apparently they do.
Apparently they do.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I knock wood. I mean, it's still going, but I think it's all signs point to yes.
Yeah. And so, and it opened initially just here in New York or New York and LA?
New York and LA.
And
yeah.
Did you notice, because you went to both premieres probably, different reactions in each town or?
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed in New York, I mean, we've done it New York, LA, between different festivals too, in Telluride, Colorado, and in Toronto, and in Berlin, and we talked
to
Paris press, and I mean, luckily everybody seems to like it, but they focus on really different things.
That's the interesting part. What are they focusing on, let's say, in Europe?
In Europe, they're actually really focusing on, they feel it's a film about class, which is, and every single journalist brought it up. They were like, it's about class. And
in what way? What's
like
the,
she feels that there that like this
sort of subtle
distinction between like who has money and who doesn't, and how that changes what you can do. And she's not destitute, but she's not where her roommate. And it's sort of like these and like these subtle distinction. Anyway, they're all obsessed with that.
I'm gonna do this a lot because that's what I do. I just jump in and interject.
Yeah, no, please.
I will fuck up your flow completely.
No,
the
I don't
whole
have
time.
A flow.
But that's interesting. So, do they think Sophie is marrying Patch just for the money?
No, they don't think she's marrying him just for the money. But they do. They do talk about that difference, that jump. It's not about like a judgment on the character as much as it is like that this is actually functional in this world, and it's like between this and this, it's not like a huge spread, but it's enough.
But it's, how do you feel about that? Because it's in the film, like, first Sophie's gonna go to Tribeca, which
because
is like,
she can
whoa,
afford
like
it.
That's that, which is where, you know, Frances would like to go, maybe.
But can't. Yeah.
And then there's people that have flats in Paris. And wouldn't it be, I'm just going to go and hang out and kind of, you know, mimic this lifestyle. So how do you feel about that? There is that.
Yeah. I mean, it's deliberately in there. It's something we were deliberately doing of this kind of trying to find a way. Because I think sometimes financial circumstances in movies can be a little, like, they're background noise, but they're not like functional in a plot. And we wanted like a whole, like when she gets a tax rebate, that like sets off a whole chain of events. And that actually means something in her life. But yeah, we did talk about it a lot.
It's hard often to actually put dollars and cents on money issues in a film because it gets dated so quickly.
It's true.
And like in Annie Hall, when Woody Allen is like, you know, they're charging you $400 a month.
I know.
It's so cute now.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because that moment when Frances gets the Treasury check on for her return, it doesn't come out all the way, does it?
Well, part of the not coming out of all the way without giving too much, we didn't want to see her whole name.
Smart.
So it was that too, but yeah, I mean, yeah.
So it's,
I mean,
class to the Europeans. It's interesting.
They're just more engaged with that part of it. It's just kind of fascinating and sort of like ambition and how that mixes. But yeah, they're much more attuned to that.
Attuned to that, but loving the film regardless.
Yeah. And then I would say LA, a lot more parents in LA of kids who moved to New York.
Right.
They came up to me like crying after screenings and they were like, our daughter is in New York and this movie makes me notice she's not having sex and she's okay. Well, I don't know what your daughter's doing, but
she probably is having sex.
But I feel like parents in LA are particularly moved by it because I think, you know, it's that thing they identify. Same with San Francisco. That was also true of San Francisco.
Right.
I feel like I've traveled with this film and talked to so many people, and I feel like a small town politician.
Why?
Well, I feel like at the 11th hour, like when they're out on the street, like shaking hands
with cars.
I'm basically thinking of John Travolta in Primary Colors when he's like out at the last minute. Anyway, that's how I feel with the film. I'm doing a lot of shaking hands and kissing babies.
And what did they say in Toronto, just out of curiosity, because that's my hometown?
Toronto was actually kind of hard to gauge the reaction because it was during the film festival, so it felt less like
too much
the
noise
people of Toronto, and it felt more like the
industry,
people for the festival.
Right.
So, but we're actually going to go back to Toronto in like a week and do a thing there for it.
At the festival?
No, it's going to open in Toronto, and we're going to go be there for the opening and talk. So I'll know what
it's a great film town. I can't imagine it's not going to go great up there.
I've been to Toronto other times for film stuff outside of the festival, and I really
it's a great vibrant community. It's a good. And just one more second on city reactions. The New York premiere.
Yeah.
How special was that night? I was there.
It was amazing.
I didn't know you at that time, or I would have come and said hello, but describe that night. It must have been special.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, we'd shown the film, and we knew it was playing well, which was gratifying, but you don't watch it every single time because it would get boring, but we were like, we're going to watch the New York premiere, and it was... it was like if we could have written audience reactions to like what we wanted them to be reacting like while we were writing the film, it was like perfect. Just they laughed at all the right spots, and the size laugh was perfect. Like, you know, puns get a slight chuckle, like a nod, you know, and then like, you know, the bigger, it was amazing. And then it was sort of, it wasn't like a full standing ovation, but it was a half.
I noticed that, and I felt like everyone should have stood up.
I felt like they were doing it. I feel like, you know, it was my version of like what I imagined having a triumph feels like. You know, it was like, for me, the farthest I can get is a half standing ovation in my head.
That's kind of, in a way, more appropriate, maybe.
Yeah.
And like it had to have been in your mind and in Noah's mind as you're making this film, because it's about New York in so many different ways, that night was going to be special. And
Well, when we were deciding what film festivals to take the movie to, because we go to New York Film Festival, I go to New York Film Festival, and I love it. And there was some feeling of like, do we hold the film for Sundance? Is that a better market to sell it in?
Right.
Does it make more sense?
Right.
Is it smarter? And then we were like, you know, we really just want to go to New York Film Festival, and let's go to Telluride and let's do the fall festivals, even though it doesn't actually make sense from a sales perspective.
Right. Like, but culturally, let's just do it. it's the end point of that story that you guys were on.
And it felt like we did the movie the whole way through exactly how we wanted to and didn't compromise at all. And it felt like, well, why would we release it in a way into the world that we were like suddenly becoming calculated about?
Exactly.
It.
And it's really important because I think there was a time, you know, the film, it makes me think a lot about different moments in film history, but mm-hmm. there was a time when directors had a festival in mind.
Yeah, sure.
Where they were like, I'm going to go with my new statement to that festival.
I know.
And, you know, Godard did it famously at Cannes, but that's what This City means to you. And to Noah, it's very important. It's a center of gravity.
And for Noah, New York Film Festival was what... when Kicking and Screaming got into New York Film Festival, that basically saved that movie from being straight to video.
Yeah.
Like, because all of a sudden it was, you know, being noticed at this very fancy festival. Yeah. And it really changed the course of, I think, what he was capable of doing. So it was really cool.
So I'm going to link that back to the first thing you said, which is you didn't know it. People still went out to cinemas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you said that, and then you've been around the world to these festivals. Just give us your, like, you know better than me and anyone else here, I don't know, that what the state of film culture is, you know, around the world.
I mean, people certainly are watching movies and watching content. I don't know. I mean, I think part of the... I mean, definitely, but numbers-wise, people are not going to movie theaters as much as they used to, especially for smaller films. Like, event films are different if it's in 3D or if it's, you know, part six of a Fast and Furious or whatever. You know, like, those movies get people out. But, I mean, part of the thing is, I mean, I feel two ways about it. This is what I feel. It's like, it's like bookstores in the 90s, like, got killed by, like, Barnes and Noble and Borders killed independent bookstores, and then Amazon killed Barnes and Noble. But the ones that survived the whole time were they're still around.
Right.
The ones that, like, for some reason, there's in Sacramento where I grew up, there's a bookstore called the Avid Reader, which is still going, and it lasted. And it feels like those institutions are going to be okay, or like Three Lives or Shakespeare and Company or whatever in New York. And in LA, there's a bookstore called Book Soup. I mean, stuff like that. Yeah. But it feels like that for film.
You know, Williamsburg has tons of.
Yeah, and it feels like that way for film too. Like, in a way, we're getting killed. But if we can kind of stay alive long enough, then we'll be like, I would say, cockroaches.
Yeah. Beautiful cockroaches that are like...
It's like indestructible after nuclear annihilation.
Yeah. Well, I have this theory about things like this that you can sort of look at the changes and the innovations in the food world, and that's your best barometer and bellwether on how cockroaches like great indie films will survive and even flourish in the middle of the bigger business of film.
Sure.
Because... you know, food culture across this country and around the world has been transforming over the last decade. And I've always noticed now restaurants popping up in Williamsburg or the Lower East Side or anywhere in New York and in Greenpoint or whatever being run by people who 10 years ago would have started a band. And like, instead of starting of a band, they're having a restaurant, and the restaurant is like a little cockroach because it's just, you know, it's resilient. It's not part of a big chain, and it's like innovative, and the food is good. And
the cockroach metaphor doesn't take you so far. I appreciate you trying to incorporate
it. We'll stamp that one out.
But no, I think it's hard because I also don't. I mean, I don't love independent cinema for the sake of it being independent. If great movies could be made in a certain way in the studio system, I'd love that. It's not like, I mean, we love well-made movies about people. And like, this movie, it took a long time to make. The script took a long time to write.
Yeah.
We shot for 50 days. I mean, it was made on a budget, but it was also made rigorously. And if there was a way to do that, if studios were financing movies in a way that they used to and really aren't anymore, yeah. of a certain kind,
yeah.
that would be great, but they're not. But I'm not interested. It's like, I feel like
I get
sort
it.
Of like,
I get I don't, it. I hope everyone else does, but I just got it.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's not like just about like indie
no.
stuff.
No. The cinematic, you know, expression is meant to be, you know, compete at the highest possible level,
right.
even though you only have $1 million or less than $1 million.
Yeah.
It's not, we're not aiming our sights at the budget. We're aiming
yeah.
our sights at
the product,
the work of
yeah.
art and its literary value, its cinematic
right.
value, and its, you know, its potential to get to go from 2-4 to 150 and plus
right.
screens and counting.
I know.
So let's move a little bit.
Okay.
But not too far.
Okay.
My partner, Shane Smith, one of the other founders of Vice, had a question at the screening that we did for the film, but I didn't pick him.
Oh.
So he was upset that
okay.
I didn't pick him. But his question was interesting, and it kind of follows. He said, you know, great story, amazing, you guys are very accomplished. You write the script, you go out for financing, and everyone's like, amazing, this is a great story, these characters are well written, it's funny, I laughed. And you and Noah and whoever else, the producers, get to that point where you're like, and it's going to be in black and white.
Yeah.
And that's when everyone goes, ugh,
yeah.
generally.
Right.
How was there that moment in the process?
It was really more, I mean, all of those steps happened. They just happened in a slightly different order. Noah had made a deal, and I had made a deal with the people who financed the movie, who it's these Brazilian guys.
I know, I met them.
Yeah.
They invited me to the
yeah.
screen.
And
great
they,
guys.
They're great.
Great guys.
They're awesome. And they were so, like, I mean, they really gave us,
right.
you know, freedom. And we actually didn't show them the script. And they knew we were going to shoot in black and white. And the only thing that they really knew was that they would get a movie, and it would be a real movie. It wouldn't be an experimental movie. It would be a movie that could...
A narrative.
It was a narrative. It would have a script. It would be, you know, similar to Noah's other movies,
yeah.
and that I would be in it. And yeah. And so, and they really took it on faith.
That's wild.
And they, like, let us, and they came and visited the set, and then, you know, they watched the early cuts and were really supportive and were totally on board with the festival schedule. And when we got the black and white thing, though, honestly was when we went to sell it, like, to
right.
distributors.
So the producers accepted
it. Yeah, they did.
They were, okay, they, so to explain now, you
yeah.
go to sell the film
and
love it, but?
Yeah, everybody said love it, but because the way, and I didn't know a lot of this before, but a way a lot of these distribution companies stay afloat is that they cover themselves by making output deals with television before, so that even if the movie loses money, they're covered.
They're
and
covered.
They can't make output deals on a black and white movie. So they cannot cover themselves. So Sony Pictures Classics and Focus Features and Fox Searchlight couldn't buy it because they couldn't cover it. It was too risky. It was actually like just like dollars and cents. It was too risky. So...
Was the asking price that high? That
no, it wasn't so high, but it's...
Do you think it was a little bit like...
To release a film is expensive, even if the
sure.
price of the film isn't a lot. So it's an investment. I mean, I also think it's risky. It is risky.
But is it just...
Risky.
But it's also... Yeah, but it's... Is it a cultural thing?
Mm.
With some producers, obviously not these guys who are great,
right.
but with the distributors that, like, that already says something about this film. It's
yeah.
not going to go far and wide. And
yeah.
How can that even be after, you know, the...
The artist.
Yeah, the artist.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's that, Harvey Weinstein, though, yeah. working
so he can
magic.
Just, like, yeah.
I mean...
Push black and white down everyone's throats.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just... I think it's, like, when they see it, it's that they see a limit to how big it can be.
Right.
So they immediately see it and they're like, well, we know it can't do X amount of dollars because nobody will, like, at a certain point people won't go see black
right.
and white movies. But I think that in some ways it makes it more special and more sought after
right.
by a certain demographic of an audience if it's in black and white. And there are people like Alexander Payne's new movie, Nebraska,
right.
is in black and white, and, you know, Good Night and Good Luck is in black and white.
Yeah.
Coen Brothers,
the new one?
No, the old one. The man
who knew too much.
No, the man who did something
interesting, yeah, worthy of us shooting a film.
I think it was Billy Bob Thornton was in it.
Yeah. That was the creepy. Yes.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah.
But anyway, it's limiting. Is the point.
So, when was it a black and white film? At what point in the conception?
Really early in writing it, we knew it was going to be in black and white. And then over the course of writing it, Noah was doing tests with Sam Levy, the DP, on different cameras, with the help of the late, great Harris Savitas and Pascal Danjean, who is a colorist. And the three of them kind of cooked up the way it looks. And it took a lot of testing, though, and some of the style is dictated by the limitations of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't handle movement super well.
Oh, wow. So you've a lot of fixed camera.
Locking it down. But that was sort of always the way we saw it, too. So it was, you know, because I always...
It's not a hand... Yeah, it doesn't feel like...
It's not handheld.
A handheld script, though, when I'm... Like, if you read it, probably.
It might feel like a handheld script if you read it. I don't know. I mean, actually, the way I always saw it when we were writing it, and I told Noah this, and he said, I see it the same way, is I think I remember turning to him at some point, and I was like, you know, I see this as, like, moving tableaus, right? And he was like, yep, that's exactly how I see it. And I was like, okay, good. Because like sometimes you don't know if you're making the same thing. And I think for him, you know, Greenberg was more locked down actually as a look, and Margot was very like it was all handheld kind of follow shots. And so I know he has the ability to go both ways as a filmmaker.
And is that little episode indicative of your creative collaboration?
Yeah, like, basically it's
like
me.
Affirmative.
Yes.
Move on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because, and isn't that amazing?
It's
like,
amazing. Yeah. It's the only time I've ever really experienced that. I mean, I kind of excel at getting behind lots of people's worldviews, which makes me a good actor, but like maybe a bad politician. I don't know, but I can easily kind of get behind a director, the way a director wants to do something, but I've never quite felt like the way I wanted to it was the same, that I wanted to do it.
Sounds like an exchange, right? There's an exchange of vision that, and when someone communicates the vision and the other person gets it, it's almost like, great, let's move on to the next part of the challenge.
Yeah.
And was it like rapid fire creative challenge, you know, problem solving, sharing?
I mean, the writing process was a little slower. I mean, there was because I feel like you, with acting and with writing, I feel like it's this, there's a part of you that doesn't know what you're doing, which is the part of you that probably comes up with the most interesting stuff, but then the part of you that knows what it's doing helps organize that other part and shape it and mold it, and you kind of need to like zoom in and out between those two modes of thinking. And I think in some ways you'll make something, you'll write something, and you're like, I don't even know what it is, and you have to kind of let it sit with yourself, and then you're like, I know what it is, it goes here. And that was like, so I felt like the writing process, it took, you know, it's you let it marinate.
Do you like writing?
I like it.
Yeah. And there a lot? Do you love it?
I love it. I find it really scary. It's really...
But satisfying, ultimately?
The most satisfying.
Like, I want to agree with you.
The most, but you don't?
I do.
You do.
I want to.
Yeah.
Okay, I did.
You did,
I just did. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think it is the most satisfying, and I love the temporality of the process, because a lot of times you don't know and you will not pick up the pen for extended periods of time. You're like,
I know.
And it was only after having some success with that kind of process that when you get to those periods, you stop seeing them as writer's block and you start seeing them as
you're doing something.
You're actually really working really hard, because you don't want to put bullshit down. You want to get to the truth of what you're creating, and Yeah.
I think, I mean, maybe it's different for novelists, but I think one of the things that I mean, I wrote plays and stuff in college and after college, and I collaborated on more devised ideas of screenplays, but they weren't actually written. And I felt like I'd moved away from writing because I was acting a lot, and then, but I feel like for screenplays, like, I think there's an idea of writing, much as there's an idea from math that we've been given by, like, movies, which is, like, apparently you have to do all your math on a mirror or on a window.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and that's not what, like, people doing math looks like.
Right.
It's not like someone, like, scribbling feverishly or being like, I can't look at you right now. Like, yeah, actually, a friend of mine pointed out in Good Will Hunting, there's this scene where they're, like, doing math together, like, him and his mentor, and they're, like, and they literally are canceling out things in an equation, and my friend's a mathematician, and he's, like, nobody cancels out things,
right,
like,
right.
After algebra.
Right.
It's done. No more canceling.
Yeah.
And I was, like, true. That doesn't make sense at all. But I feel like there's this idea of, like, a writer who's sitting down, like, typing constantly. And, like, novels have a lot of words, but, like, screenplays and plays don't... You can't solidly type for 8 hours.
Right.
I mean, you can,
right.
But it's going to be drivel. A lot of
right.
it is thinking. A lot of it's staring out the window. A lot of it is, like, almost physically organized. Sometimes I just, like, cut lines out and try to find the way they're organized physically.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I just feel like there's... It's... But this, this idea of writing I have from movies is totally misleading, and I think...
Right.
Makes me feel like I'm less productive than I am.
Yeah. And how long was the writing period for Frances Ha?
It was a year.
It was a year.
Yeah.
Right. And what were you doing in that year?
I mean, I was doing I was acting a lot. So it was also happening in between stuff and in makeup chairs, and it wasn't all concentrated.
But how often did your brain go to the story and the character and the...
You know, it's funny because it's not, for me, it's like, it's almost like, it's not actively, it's almost like I put the money in the machine and the machine does, it's almost like I give myself these questions, like, here are the problems in the script, and I don't actively think about them. I just keep remembering the problems sort of in the back of my head, and then...
Yeah.
They'll solve themselves, but it's not like...
But was there a joy in that process?
Yeah, like, so fun.
Yeah.
Because it felt like I was letting my brain do something, but I wasn't thinking my way through it in any literal way.
But in a way, was, you know, in those moments, the artwork is really coming into your life. And is that a beautiful thing
so
for you?
Fun.
Yeah,
it's so fun. It's also like everything.
It stops being anything that resembles a career at that moment, doesn't it? And it becomes so much more important about.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's also like it. I mean, like, I'm not a saintly person. I'm incredibly prone to, like, jealousy and pettiness and self-aggrandizement. Mm. And what's amazing about it is it like. Cures all of it. Like,
right.
The work cures all of it. It makes you so much more capable of being appreciative of other people instead of jealous of them. It makes you more sensitive, right? Yeah,
it makes you better.
It just makes you more capable of, like, resting in what you do and knowing that that's enough. And I feel like when I've been thwarted or frustrated, that's when I'm, like, kind of a small person about things.
Does that change that process and that kind of, like, it sounds like you had a revelation in the midst of this process. Does that change the way you think of the business of filmmaking? And do you think that if that process you described was the process that most people went on in the production of film, that our film culture would look different?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, well, I don't... I'm sure everybody's process is different, but I feel like if everybody kind of had access to that, like, total love of doing it and joy and amazement and excitement, like, that kind of engagement, yeah, I think it would be different. I mean,
kind of, yeah, it would have to be.
But then,
I get the feeling that kind of stuff doesn't happen too often. A lot of people,
right.
even ones that love film yeah. and are very serious are still, I think, you know, consumed in a, you know, in a careerist sort of mentality where yeah. the writing of a script is kind of mechanical and
yeah.
it kind of makes sense and it's like, wow, that was great and punchy.
Yeah.
But
right.
But little beyond that.
I don't know. I mean, I'm of two minds about it because on the one hand, it was really life-changing for me to make this movie. And I would hope that I have more experiences like that. But at the same time, sometimes I think, I go on both sides, like, sometimes I think that having to answer to an audience is not always a bad thing. And sometimes, like, the mechanics of making a certain type of movie they can have an art in themselves. Like, I don't know, I was watching, like Hitchcock. Like, that's, like, he's a master, but and it's inspired, but it's also incredibly precise and mechanical in a way.
And, for sure, but it...
And, like, but sometimes it doesn't... I mean, I just watched To Catch a Thief, which I don't think is very good. I don't like it as much. It's not as good as his other ones, and I don't know why.
But it's a very colorful film.
It's colorful, and it's beautiful, but it's, like, for me, there's something missing in it, and I can't tell you what, but I don't know, but sometimes I feel like structure is
good.
Yeah,
his best films were the ones that were actually... most personal to him and deeply motivated by weird
stuff,
personal tortures.
That's
and that film was a kind of formulaic kind of, you know,
and it was
whatever thief film, what do you call that, a caper film a thief film a film about thieves. So I want to go just one layer deeper into your psychology as an artist, and then we'll get out of your brain.
Sorry. But I always feel nervous when I have these kinds of conversations because I'm like, this is just some bullshit I'm thinking this week. And then, like, in 10 years, someone's going to be like, but you said this thing. And I'll be like, I didn't know what I was talking about. Anyway, sorry.
So one more twist of the screw, right?
Yeah.
Those moments where you're not working on the film because you're doing other things, but the film is in there, the script, the story, the characters are percolating, and then it comes back to you as a problem or a question, and you engage with it, and you feel that purity of that engagement. Do you also feel at that time, because you talked about not forgetting the audience, this is pretty like self-absorbed, right, this moment, do you not feel also that at that moment of a maximum self-absorption, that's actually what you owe the audience? Because the thing gets good when you're fully in. And actually that is what a viewer really wants, is like, bring me, the worst word is like authenticity, because it gets thrown around everywhere all the time. But that's what that is, that's an authentic moment.
Yeah.
And you only, if you are allowed to that moment, does the thing on the other end get good for a viewer?
Right.
Or do you think that's bullshit?
No, I don't think that's bullshit. I think that there's something that happens, I think, when you get so deeply into something, too, where I think it paradoxically, you almost, like, you lose yourself, even though it is inherently self-absorbed. It's like the self sort of goes away. It's weird.
And do you approach some kind of universal truth?
Yeah,
that
probably
moment.
At that moment. Then no, it's true. I mean, I have a tendency to speak kind of dramatically about these things. So you're totally leading me right down into my comfort zone, which is like, it's like
I stay just, here.
Yeah, but I do think there is something that happens that kind of, you're so in it, and then you're gone. I mean, it's almost like you have to give yourself so far that you go away, and then
you lose yourself in that moment, and it's
you come back.
Okay.
And I was gonna say, actually, in Frances Ha, this is like this is really like inside baseball. But when in the first scene, Frances and Sophie are hanging out together, and Sophie's knitting. This is in the montage, and Frances reads something to her. She says, "Oh, this is interesting." And then she reads something, and it's from this book called *Sincerity and Authenticity* by Lionel Trilling. Anyway, because I was reading it, and I thought it was really like. And anyway, the quote is: "To praise a work of art, to call it by calling it sincere, is to say at best it's like intentions were good or something like that.
Right.
And like that it's almost like used as a slight.
Right.
But like authenticity has greater weight. It's almost like the
right.
those like distinctions between the sublime and the beautiful.
Right.
It's anyway, it's like really great and really
well, sincere sounds like it was an attempt to capture authenticity that failed and
right.
the authenticity
feels
nails
like...
it. And this is a perfect segue because I want to get out of yeah. your brain now.
Okay.
And I want to talk about the film so you can
yeah.
deep breath.
All right.
So what is, if you can really crystallize it, the thing, the object of this authentic quest? When you kept coming back to writing
yeah.
Francis Ha,
yeah.
it's about a lot of different
yeah.
things and, you know, class, like
yeah,
the French
yeah.
and the Europeans say, maybe.
Yeah.
But was there one thing that, like, always brought you back, that pulled you in your guts and in your heart, that you knew, this is what I'm doing here?
Well, I mean, I think depending on the day, there were different, I mean, like sometimes I read it and I was like, this is terrible. This is a terrible, this is a boring movie. Why am I writing? This is, who even cares? And like, I'd have this sort of like, you know, and then other days I'd read it and I'd be like, it's funny. I don't know, it's pretty good. But like, I do think that there is a, I know what I want it to do, I guess, more than I know what it does. And what I want it to do is like, I don't know. The films that I'm scared. It's like, I feel like I'm just gonna go into like, just emotional gobbledygook about like films I love, but I feel
that's
like
okay.
it's like a.
It's totally acceptable to talk about
okay.
that. It's not like you're gonna swear like a sailor on shore.
I know, but I feel like Francis goes through this kind of hero's journey almost, and that seems epic in a way, even though it's small. And I think. Finding, like, to me, I mean, I feel like I can talk about this even though maybe somebody will watch this who hasn't seen the movie, but, like, at the end, to me, her doing what she does and accepting the job that she does, but then making art anyway, like, choreographing her dance, like, just do, like, there's something in the doing of it and, like, and that, like, there's like a way that she stops reaching for things and she starts being and just working from there. I find it very emotional when other people do that.
Yeah.
Like my dad, when I was growing up, did for himself, and he's not like a hammy guy, but he did stand-up comedy, like, for himself, and I don't know, and, like, I grew
There's
up...
There's something, like, triumphant in
so
that.
So triumphant.
Like, so heroic
yeah.
about that, yeah.
And like, something about, like, I grew up watching a lot of community theater, like, there was a couple professional theater companies in Sacramento, but it was mostly, like, City College and the State University in Sacramento, and then just, like, community theaters that were non-professional, that people like substitute teachers or doctors or, you know, people in the community who worked at coffee shops would on their downtime be in musicals and plays. And I don't know.
It's a huge...
To me that like...
Well, not only is it personal triumph
yeah.
and of personal histories, but I think it's like maybe even a neglected character in the history of literature or film. I was always struck by the character... If I was smarter and better, I'd remember the name. At the end of, you know, Amadeus?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
what's his name?
Oh, Salieri.
Salieri.
So, yeah.
And he...
Oh, my God, I watched that movie so many
times. Yeah, do you remember, I always, that scene at the end,
yeah.
for me, identified, like, a really powerful trope or
yeah.
you know, which is... He's the failed Mozart.
Yeah.
He's not the good guy.
Yeah.
He's shit. He was the one stealing. And he's exiting the
yeah.
the whatever the sanitarium
yeah.
or whatever, and he's like, I bless you as like the.
Everyone's playing in my mind. Everyone's playing Mozart as he's like yeah.
Yeah, but he blesses them
right.
Like the Prince of Failure basically blesses you.
Yeah.
As you know.
Yeah.
It's like in a really interesting character,
me...
in not only
yeah.
that, but there are like a lot of real people who had these ambitions to be a singer or to be a dancer.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
at some point they have to, there is that moment in their lives where they hang up the skates.
Yeah. I mean, I really for me, like the Salieri, like the idea that he was good enough to know that he was not as good as him.
Exactly.
And that he knew it the whole time, and even though he was celebrated and even though Mozart was like down, he knew he wasn't as good. And like that's like
that torture.
So heartbreaking. I love that movie.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I didn't really I didn't make Amadeus. But I don't know.
But there's
yeah.
Frances Ha is that she's at that moment, right?
Yeah, she is. I mean, yeah, that's one of the. I mean, that's sort of like the giving up, but the kind of courage in giving up a certain aspect of something is part of it. I mean, there's a few. I feel like there's always kind of like there's a thing that I'm driving towards, and I'm sort of failing in different ways all the time. I'm always surprised that it's not better than it is whenever I see myself act or like make something. What? I'm like, oh God, I thought that was really great. I mean, it's not that it's bad, but it's like for some reason, like I thought it would be even better,
right.
like all the time.
Right. And how about with this film? Do you feel
this
that
is
way?
As close as I've come? But I do. I still felt like the first time I like watched it all the way through it with all the edits and the fixes. Like, I was sad. I was sort of like, that's it.
Oh shit, really?
That's all we did? It felt like it was more. Like, but I mean, I think that's probably why, you know, everybody goes crazy at a certain point because it feels like, you know, you're just trying. It's just endless, like trying at the same thing and failing different interesting ways.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I was gonna say something semi-pretentious about Godard saying that all of his films are failures, and he always accepted that in advance. They're never going to be the things that he wished and he wanted them to be. And just the varying degrees of failure is his whole cinematic career.
In a way, it helps you, I think, get over any fear because you're like, well, it's going to be bad, so I could just start from there.
it saves you in a way. In advance. Okay, maybe one last question.
Oh, sure.
Frances wanted to be something.
Oh, yeah.
At least one thing.
Right,
right?
Right.
But we don't know if she wanted to get married or not, but she wanted to dance.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
And her life deals her a hand.
Yeah.
And she is kind of Salieri in a way.
Yeah.
But she finds a new path.
Yeah.
Where she can have that and still do the other job and the other thing. Can you detach yourself now from that decision and look back and go, I'm going to now explore the other type of person who would have said, you know what?
Yeah.
Who would like smash their fist on the table and go, I do not accept that.
Yeah, I'd like to make a film about that person. I haven't figured out how to do it yet, but I would really like to make a film about that person because I think, you know, that person's just as real.
And completely different.
And
from
completely
Frances.
Different. I mean, I think it would just, I'd like to really make more films. I love acting and I hope to keep acting, but the level of, like literally feeling like there's a weight lifted off of me with making things is kind of unparalleled, and I feel like I just hope that I can get out of my way enough to be able to like do it and keep doing it because I don't know if I'm anything, it's an expert at like finding ways to stop myself from doing stuff because you know.
Well, don't
it's scary.
Don't find ways to stop yourself because you're a great writer.
Okay,
it was a great
good.
Film. You should do it again.
Thanks. Thank you. Great. That was really fun.
Yeah, great. Awesome.